I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Episode 9 of The Story Studio with your hosts, Luke Condor and Daniel Wilcox. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
And welcome to The Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. It's a show for filmmakers, writers, comic book makers, crowdfunders, entrepreneurs, creators, and anyone looking to tell stories in the modern world. My name is Daniel Wilcox, and I'm joined today by...
Luke Condor.
And...
and Ian McEwan.
There we go. I think we're going to freak people out by switching that and flipping it about a bit, but welcome.
How did you find it, Dan? Was it nerve-wracking? Did you get through it okay?
I think I did all right. I think, we're there. How was my face?
It was pretty, it kind of buffered a bit for me, so it was pretty stationary.
Oh, no, you looked like you were in the zone.
Yeah. that's full focus mode. That's knowing what you got to say and just getting it out there.
We missed a trick. We probably should have got Ian to have a go at the intro, being a voice guy.
Oh God, I don't know. That would be a tall order to say all that. Jeez.
It's nice and wordy. We throw it out there as quick as we can, just so it's, you know.
It's like the fine print at the end of like a prescription commercial, like may cause uncontrollable falling down syndrome.
Yeah.
Terms and conditions apply.
Yes.
Okay, so how are we doing, guys? How's the writing? How's the speaking?
Good. I'm just prepping to do another story, one of Luke's own, about time travel, and it's a hilarious one. I like immediately fell in love with the characters, so I'm gonna have a lot of fun recording it today.
Amazing. So just to throw it out there for those who don't know, Ian McEwan is one of our regular narrators on the Other Story podcast, and so yeah, he's working on one of our stories at the minute, or one of Luke's stories.
Yes.
I mean, Dan, how's the writing? Have you been doing much writing this week, or have you been more reading and proofing and stuff?
More reading and proofing, and going over a couple of the whole story of Lazarus at the minute. Probably I'm missing writing a bit because I really haven't written anything substantial apart from a couple of blogs on Steam, which are doing all right. But it's steady week. How about you, Luke?
Yeah, I've just been planning. We're going to be doing our Other Story Writer-a-thon, where we're going to be writing five short stories in 7 days. And
whoa,
I've just been...
I wanted seven, but I wasn't allowed.
Yeah. I know that those 7 days are going to be pretty hectic. So I'm just enjoying this like pre-planning stage and just taking my time with it. I even had a bit of a lie in today. I got up at 6:30 instead of 5:30 because I just thought this is going to be the last day I'm going to be getting up early for the rest of this week, so enjoy it while
that is early.
There.
I can't even. I don't think my brain would be functioning that early.
What's your get up time?
It depends. usually, I mean, when I'm just narrating, like I've been doing for the last 3 months, it's been like get up at 10, start narrating at 11, and narrate until my voice is absolutely fried, and then edit until my brain is absolutely fried, and then rinse and repeat.
Ugh. Sounds good. I can't remember the last time I got up at 10.
Yeah, I'm not a morning person. I'm a total night owl, which is why you guys wake up to like messages from God only knows what hour in the morning over in the UK.
But yeah, I think we timed the write-a-thon badly. In all honesty, I think it's going to be a fun week. It's going to be a hard week, but yeah, because we've got Lincoln on the Saturday, and obviously we've put for the write-a-thon to start on Sunday. So the last 2 days of the write-a-thon are pretty much going to be a no-show. I don't know if you've factored that into your plans, Luke.
I've got it in my diary that we're starting the write-a-thon tomorrow.
Let's start it tomorrow. No, let's start it tomorrow.
Because I've got it that we finish and then we're at Lincoln the day after.
Okay, but that would work out a lot better. So
I might have that wrong.
Well, we can
move it.
Rut-roll. Yeah, we can move it. But yeah, should we dive into our big whoops?
What a big whoop.
Yeah, sure.
Have you got a big whoop, Ian?
You guys go first.
you do the honors this week.
Okay, so I watched a documentary, like a docudrama series this past week.
I love documentaries.
It's called The Jinx. I don't know if you heard about it. Do you know much about it?
No.
So it's about this guy called Robert Durst. There's five families in New York, with the richest families in New York or something. And they've got like a son called Robert Durst. In the 80s, his wife went missing. And then one of his best friends got shot and killed. I don't know how, I don't know why, I don't know what happened to the body. And then recently he was arrested for renting an apartment as a woman. He dressed up as a woman and rented it as a woman, and killing his neighbor, dismembering the body and throwing it into the sea. So it's just
sounds like one of your stories.
It did, yeah. So it starts from there, and then you quickly realize that this guy is absolutely, he's kind of charming. Like he wins you over throughout the series, but you're like constantly thinking, this guy is definitely done it. He's definitely done these like terrible things, but you kind of like him. And then the last episode, I don't know how ethical this is, because they're interviewing him like in the present day throughout the series while they're doing this like backstory. And I think he must have some sort of psychopathic tendencies there, because it's almost like he's challenging them to find him out, to be caught out. And then in the last episode, during one of the interviews, they have some evidence that's not been found before. It's not been admitted into any court or anything like that. And then they present it to him there and then while they're interviewing him. And then he's like backed into a corner, but then he walks away and he doesn't realize his mic's still on. And those last scenes when he's talking to himself are like so eerie. He lets out so much of maybe he's like schizophrenic or something, because it's different personality. He's like arguing with himself as he walks away. He's doing different voices. And the music, it's amazing. Like, it's
that sounds
worth
actually
it.
Terrifying.
It's called The Jinx.
The Jinx, yeah, because like the idea is that he's a jinx. Everyone he knows seems to die, or like he had seven dogs and they all went missing mysteriously. No one knows what happened to him. His brother is terrified of him, has like restraining orders against him and stuff. But his brother is also extremely wealthy. Like, they're both really, really wealthy. So if Robert goes anywhere near him, like there's all these like Secret Service type people following him around all the time, and it's such a weird life that the guy has.
It sounds like a psychological version of Bronson.
I haven't seen Bronson.
A bit more twisty. But have you not? That's I know obviously it's a Tom Hardy adaptation of the film, but he's pretty mental in that, and there are some strange sort of eerie scenes in there. But
yeah,
sounds
Tom
like
Hardy's really
twisty.
Good at playing crazy.
Yeah, he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's just psycho. Every movie.
Have you seen the Cray twins? Well, I can't remember what it's called now.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah, Legend. I really enjoyed it. It's cool.
To see him play such two, I mean, they're identical. They were identical twins, but they seemed like such, I don't know how much of it was true exactly, but the personalities are just, you couldn't get farther away from each other. And he does such an amazing job. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Hardy's great. But I'd recommend The Jinx just for those last 10 minutes. They're like so good. And like,
how many is it? Just one big documentary? It's not.
No, it's six episodes.
Okay.
About an hour long or so. But if you want to.
Is that on telly or Netflix? Or
it's on Netflix. And it's just, for an inspiration for a character, like, he's definitely one of them. He's definitely up there.
That's awesome.
Can we use him?
we can use him. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
Character study.
Yes, 100%. My big whoop this week is a selfish one, as a lot of mine are, but me and Luke have finished our first drafts of our project, which is just fantastic. Just feels good to have that first draft behind us and get that down. So we've got two books now that are currently 70,000 words that are different to what we originally planned. But I mean, I think we're happy with them. Are you happy with yours?
Yeah, it needs a lot of tweaking in the last act of the rewrite. But I think the story that it went for in the end is a lot stronger than what we originally planned.
Which is cool. And yeah, it will be... The more I'm thinking about the first draft now, and like I said earlier, I'm going back and reading through it. There are parts I'm picking out now where I can definitely see patterns and things that might need to change and just bits that we can work through. And so me and Luke, as of next week, we'll be swapping over the drafts because we're going to have another read through and just have a quick look and add notes where we need to. And then we'll crack on with the second draft and get that in motion. So yeah exciting stuff.
Yeah,
and looking
cool.
at covers is fun.
Yeah, I'm thinking I might shave now because I haven't. I don't know if you noticed, my beard is pretty wild. And it's only because
it's pretty righteous.
Yeah,
it's a good beard.
I don't trim at all when I'm writing the novel. I just like to let it grow. So maybe I'll. Well,
how poetic.
Or you can keep it until the end and then just go full Gimli.
Every word I edit, I just snip another. Never
you never go full. You never go full Gimli.
How about you, Ian? What's your big whoop?
Well, I have a selfish one, but I'd rather do a plug for something else that I just saw. There's a new musical called "Come From Away," and it's playing. It's over here in the U.S. Sadly, you guys can't go see it yet, but hopefully it'll take a trip over to the West End or something. It's about on 9/11. There were over 200 some flights diverted as the airspace over the U.S. was closed. There's a small town in Newfoundland called Gander, where 38 of those planes were diverted to. So this town had a population of something like 7,000 people, and overnight, literally overnight, the population jumped by 9,000 because of all the people on those planes. So this musical is the story of this town coping with this huge influx of people. And, you know, the planes didn't just land and get to take off again. They were there for 4 or 5 days. So they had to feed them. They had to house them. The planes had animals on them that had to be cared for. So it's about the people of the town coping with this crisis and all the people on the flights sort of being taken out of the world without having plans to be in this small town, not knowing, you know, if their families in New York or DC are safe, and just coping with that experience from all sides. It's an amazing piece. I think it's one of the best things I've ever seen in a theater. The music is Celtic inspired, and there's a huge jam session after the curtain call at the end where the whole audience just was standing up and clapping along with the band. And one of the cool things about it was that the cast is like 10 actors, so they each play around 5 different characters. So it's just like the performing, the music, the story was positively riveting.
It sounds quite like a serious topic for a musical. I mean,
yeah.
Well, the thing is, a story about 9/11 can so easily go too far in any direction. You know, it could be too sad, it could be too gory, it could drum up those memories for people in a really not productive way for, you know, a theatrical work. Mm-hmm. But this piece had so much tasteful humor about just these people that had never met, thrown into this small space together, and just the real humanity of that. So it had a perfect balance of, you know, poignancy and humor. And if any of the listeners can go see it, if it's in the UK or if it's in the US, go see it, because it's
what was the name of it again?
Come From Away.
Come From Away. Was that like a main character, like a main point of view, or how? I've not been to see too many musicals myself. I've only seen Book of Mormon and Avenue Q and some of the bigger ones
and but, Sweeney Todd.
So how did the story work in that? Did it have a main family or something like that?
It had two main groups of people. The main, the first of which were the sort of administrative people of Gander, Newfoundland, the mayor, the police, the one police officer, the SPCA person who was dealing with the animals, sort of the admin people of the town. And then the other group were a core group of passengers and airline workers that had, you know, through lines, through storylines through the throughout the piece. So like the pilot of one of the flights was talking about her husband back in Dallas and trying to find a way back to Dallas. And then there was a mother whose son was a firefighter in New York. So there were a couple core characters on each side that had, you know, storylines, but it really was just, you know, a sort of machine gun of stories. It was really fantastically put together, though.
That's pretty epic. And when you get into that actual theater and you get everyone up and singing and getting involved as well, it's because I saw We Will Rock You when I was in school. I must have been about 13, 14. And one of the takeaways from that was at the end, they did Bohemian Rhapsody and everyone got up and was singing it. And when you're in a room with everyone else, you do become part of it, don't you? And I think that's, it's such a nice feeling to be in that.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, I mean, that's my big whoop.
Yeah, it sounds good, man. It's really interesting to know that sort of subject matter can be done in that way. I'm sure it does. I'm sure it is all the time, but not so much that I've seen. That I would like.
Yeah,
it's to
hard see more taking,
of it.
Like you said, it's hard taking a big
tragedy.
Topic.
Well, yeah. A tragedy like that you know, and I'm here and I'm in Washington D.C. right now. So this performance was at Ford's Theater. Yes, the Ford's Theater. So there are a lot of people here that lived through it in a very up close and personal way with the Pentagon being hit as well. Mm. I know my mom was just five blocks away when the plane hit. So to see this crowd respond in the way that it did, getting up, laughing, crying together was, you know, not only was the piece incredibly well put together, well written, the music was catchy, it just had everything going for it, but to see the audience have that kind of response, especially in a place that was touched by this tragedy, it sealed the deal for me. It was like, we are all in this together as an audience. We lived through this, you know. It was one of the most cathartic experiences in a theater that I've ever had.
Okay, I have to wait for that to come over into the UK. I don't think anything like that's over here yet.
I know that it's going to Broadway. These are like the pre-Broadway previews. So I wouldn't be surprised. It's only a matter of time till it blows up and goes all over the world.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about audio and Ian's a narrator, but you're also an actor, right? So you're a musical actor. Is that?
I am an opera singer by trade and training. I went to school specifically for opera. Got my bachelor's and master's in voice performance, and have ever since I was a little kid, I've wanted to voice cartoons. I've wanted to do video game voices. Like, I've always secretly wanted to be a voice actor. And over the past year, I've finally had some time to devote to sort of getting that engine running. And the way that I chose to do it was to start doing audiobooks, because I know several people who made the exact same transition from specifically opera to audiobooks and voiceover. So I had a lot of friends that could show me the way.
Did you, I remember when I was a kid, I used to read comic books and I used to hide in my bedroom and I used to read it out loud. So I'd do the different voices and not very good at it, but I'm guessing, did you do a similar thing?
Well, when I was a kid, you know, my dad would read to me pretty much every night. And if he didn't do the voices, I would not go to sleep. I was like, you're not doing the voice. Like when you read I remember specifically when he would read the Disney's Lion King sort of like gold spine, you know, short version kids book. If he didn't do the hyena voices, I was very upset.
And was he good at the hyena voices? Was that...
I can neither confirm nor deny.
It was good enough.
I eventually went to sleep, so it must have passed.
I'm fine. I'm doing that at the minute with Peppa Pig books for my son, who's nearly two. It's really hard to do a Peppa Pig voice.
Do you have Peppa Pig
I'm not
the US?
Familiar with.
Are you not? It's a very British show. Yeah. It's basically a family that revolves around a bitch of a little pig. And then I say that with love because Bailey loves it, but oh my god, is that pig a bitch?
I know a few dads similar to Dan who have said similar things. Peppa Pig is the bane of their life, I think.
She's the worst example of a person. She's selfish. She's whiny. She's kids love it. So,
kids are selfish and whiny too, right?
Yeah.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Well played.
Do you do like? Just a random question, Ian. Do you do like impressions and stuff? I mean, like, because when you do the audio books and you do like the different characters and the other stories, you really do get into character, like in such a like wholehearted way. And they all have different accents. You're amazing at doing the different accents, the different like you could do like children's voices or like older man voices. It's pretty incredible. Do you do like general impressions?
Not like on the spot impressions, you know, like people are like, oh man, do, Alan Rickman. I can't, cool. I tried to do an Alan Rickman for a hipster.
I know you're Alan Rickman.
I can do a little bit of Alan Rickman. I can do him like, just like one word. No. But if I try and do.
Oh, he's rolling over in his grave, man.
No. If I try and like do any other words. I just can't do it because my has to have my tongue in a certain way to do that. Like,
how about yes?
Well, it's like my voice is too high to do a true Alan Rickman because his voice was super low, but like it's both nasal and throaty at the same time. It's so hard to do. I remember I was in an opera production where. I mean, I always goof off when it's real bad. I goof off when I'm not being, you know, directed or conducted or whatever. And
goof off in the US, that means like.
Oh, God. Oh, it means to just like to be a class clown, to just like make jokes and stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Apologies. Cool. If I offended. I don't know the lingo like at all. I'm sorry. But we would just, both of us would be trying to do our best Alan Rickman and just crying laughing because neither of us could.
He has got an incredibly deep voice. I think it's in Sweeney Todd when he just makes some little low noises that are just.
There you go.
That's on the highlight reel. Yeah. Do you find, what sort of transition, how does, opera training help with doing vocal work and with voices? Is it, you know, sort of controlling of diaphragm? Is it tone? Is it, what is it that links the two together?
I think that the fact that opera singers are so focused on learning how to use the voice to be expressive and only that, you know, like that a lot of people knock opera singers for not being able to act. That has changed very much in recent years. You know, my undergrad training and grad training had acting classes as part of it. It's like, we get that we need to act now, but the most important thing at the core of every opera is the voice and expressing through that. So I think that just that as a baseline of understanding that that is the goal, and the voice is the means, that they are, you know, distant cousins, you know. I'm not trying to project over an orchestra in this vanishing cabinet of a recording booth, but I am trying to express with my voice specifically because they don't see me, you know. And also the training in opera, you know, gives us a certain amount of stamina, which is really good for narrating. If I have long days of like 6 hours of narration, I know I'll be able to do that without hurting myself because I am breathing correctly. I am, you know, if I'm messing with my vocal apparatus, I have control over that and I know what I'm doing and I know how to stay within the bounds, you know, of healthy vocalization without, you know, because sometimes I do really like husky voices and whispering voices and stuff like that. And I have to be, you know, really, really, really aware that I'm not hurting myself. So that those are the two main points that have helped this transition for myself and my friends that have done the same thing.
Yeah. Should we pull it into books now and look a bit more at sort of talking about stories? So in your experience so far, because you've done a lot of audiobook narrating, and obviously you've done Luke's Hipster from Out of Space book recently, which I'm very, very excited to hear.
It's available, on audible.com.
Yeah, it's available now. There's I put a link up. It's hypeurl.co/hipsteraudio. And you download it for free, or just buy it a la carte, I think is the terminology.
But it is indeed.
Yeah, it's out, and it's pretty amazing, I have to say. Ian's work on it is pretty damn great.
I was pretty happy with the final product. I mean, that, like, I can't wait to read 2 and 3 in the.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Trilogy, because these characters are so awesome.
Oh, wacky.
Wacky, yes.
Wacky.
Yeah.
But in your experience so far of, you know, audiobooks and stuff, because I think for me, when I kind of took to writing a bit more seriously a couple of years ago, I still neglected the audiobook market. I still didn't see that as a valuable resource. But especially in the last few months, I've really taken to audiobooks and commutes to work and any sort of spare seconds you've got are fantastic just for listening to stories and using that time. So as a narrator, is how do you see the audiobook scene in general, I guess?
It's really been blowing up. It's kind of crazy how I found myself in this business at the exact point at which it is starting to just, you know, spread like audible wildfire. It I think I have my own theories as to why, but I have been blessed with a wealth of opportunities in the short time that I've been doing this. You know, opera is the total opposite, that there are like so many singers and so few jobs. Audiobooks, the audiobook business is the only business that I know of where it's the absolute opposite. There are too many opportunities and too few people narrating.
I don't think there's too few people narrating, but there's too few people narrating who are actually...
Oh, good.
I mean, the effort's there and the passion's there, but they just don't have... I don't know, they're not professionals, you know what I mean? They've not been doing this for a while like Ian has. And when I listened to... I had a few... different auditions that people send in on ACX, and I remember going for a few and I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. And then I got to Ian and I was like, no, this is actually good. Like, it was just so, it was like, it's such a level above, it's crazy.
Well, I appreciate that. That's really kind. I'm still learning, you know, anything I say on here, take with a grain of salt. I've only been doing this, you know, I have friends that have been in the business for many years when I have just, you know, about two now that I've been in the business, but it's the response that I'm getting from authors like Luke, again, thank you, has been really encouraging.
Is there any sort of books? So do you find any certain types of books work better for audio than others?
Well, you know, I haven't done any nonfiction narrating. Mm. I know some of my friends, narrator friends have, and they, you know, not only is it difficult to make nonfiction, you know, biographies can be very interesting, but like nonfiction, like a textbook, it can be really a whole new different challenge to make that interesting. Whereas, you know, a quirky sci-fi book like Hipster or some of the other stuff that I've done, you get the words sort of jump off the page a little bit more. So I personally don't think nonfiction lends itself to audio just because it would put me to sleep. But I think that the sales sort of speak for themselves. The one genre that sells more than any other genre in audiobooks is sci-fi. Mm. And I think that's because sci-fi and fantasy, I should lump in that category as well, usually has the most interesting characters from a vocal standpoint. You know, you have aliens, you have monsters, you have talking cats, you have, you know, and the next after that is mystery and suspense. And that, you know, is kind of a no-brainer. If you have a narrator that knows how to build tension from a written text, like, it's like a movie. You'd be on the edge of your seat listening to a guy trying to find a murderer or solve a crime, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I found there's definitely a range of, because, you know, when I was ignorant to it, I kind of assumed that most audiobook narrators will be fantastic, will sort of take my attention. And I've listened quite a few now, a lot of Stephen King ones that I've worked through. And obviously people that work on Stephen King tend to have a very, very deep, very, like you say, suspenseful voice. It's all very dark.
But there have been scary.
And there have been a couple I've listened to where if the narrator isn't as sharp as they need to be, it's really off-putting for the story, which is a shame because, you know, you can have a fantastic story and then a narrator kind of just take that edge of it, which is a shame. But do you find that you prefer telling a certain type of story, or there's a type of genre that you lend yourself better to?
I definitely do think that that is, you know, the sci-fi subgenre of quirky sci-fi. I mean, like, if an author doesn't have a sense of humor, I get bored, you know. I would say quirky sci-fi just because I'm, you know, in my everyday life and in my operatic life, I'm the, you know, goofy sidekick guy, you know, in real life and on stage. So I have, you know, I love to do stories that have a good sense of humor.
Well, if you can't hear that whining in the background, that's just my son. He's fine.
What would be like the biggest challenge when recording an audiobook? Because there's a lot of words. I mean,
oh god,
I kind of feel like people think, oh, audiobook narrating, I'd like to have a crack at that, but I don't really realize.
Just read out loud.
I don't really realize how challenging it can be.
It is a real challenge. You know, sometimes I just have really bad days and just trip over sentences over and over and over again and have like one line that I can't get that takes an hour to get right. So that's the first challenge that I ran into. But I found that there, you know, if you do a good warm up, some tongue twisters, you can get past that pretty easily. The biggest challenge that I run into is just the time it takes to edit these things down, because we can do some simple math here. Every finished hour of narration usually takes 2 hours to record and then another 4 hours to edit. So for every hour that you hear on an audiobook, for me at least, There has been 6 hours of work put into that 1 hour. And sometimes it's longer. Sometimes I run into problems with the audio that I need to use all these newfangled contraptions that they have to, you know, take out little noises, little clicks that I didn't hear while recording that would be really distracting to a listener. So really just the time it takes to make it pristine and professional is the big challenge.
How about consistency? Because I can imagine that with, you know, a 300 page book, that if you start off at the beginning and you've got that energy, just keeping that level of, you know, inflection of momentum behind you right through to the finish. Do you ever find that you get sort of towards the end and you go, I'm gonna have to re-record that because it sounds a bit, you know,
lackluster? Yeah. And I have run into that. I did a book that one of the worst reviews that I got was exactly saying that exact thing, that like towards the end I just sounded like I didn't want to be reading the book, which was not, couldn't get further from the truth. I had a lot of fun on this book. And I was trying to go for the character at the end was like, he had gone through a lot of crap and he was tired and it was a first person narration. So I like wanted to have that. And it came across as like, this guy is just bored with this book. So yeah, there's definitely that plays into it. That is one of the reasons that I try to do 2 hour sprints rather than staying in the studio for like 6 straight hours, because if I don't take a break every once in a while, my brain gets fried, my voice gets fried. I lose that momentum. Mm. So
do you enjoy it?
It can be a challenge.
Do you enjoy it?
I do. I love it. Cool. I love it. I get to make funny voices in a giant box. Like it's, I get to be as ridiculous, as evil, as crazy, as, you know, heartfelt as I can be, and that's my job. It's really awesome.
Knowing how much time you put into it, I do sometimes feel bad when we give you another story, and I realize that I'm giving you another chunk of work. So, but you're always amazing, and they're all like, even Carl, the editor, always says that every time is like spotless. Like it's amazing.
He loves your stuff.
Well, I love his work on, like, the last episode, the stuff he did with Without Sin. I was listening, like, I, it's very rare that I can sort of detach myself from listening to my own voice. Like, you know, it's, whether it's singing or narration, like, I hear it and I get critical of it, but listening to Without Sin, I was just, I don't want to be, you know, tooting my own horn, so to speak.
No, you feel free to. It was fantastic.
I was riveted, but everything that he did with it just took it to the next level. So
it's one of my favorite episodes, that one. There's a really good quote. What is something like, she's a harlot or something like that. Do you know which bit I mean?
Send the harlot back to Gamora.
Yes.
That's the one, yeah.
There you go.
Do you find that's a bit of a different experience? Because I can imagine that a lot of the stuff that you do is, you know, playing vocals without a lot of ambiance around it. And what we're trying to do with Carl on the other stories is to give that extra depth. So do you find that worked well with you, or is that, you know?
Well, it was actually, this is one thing that I haven't really talked with you guys about yet. When he first got on board, it was a huge challenge. I wished that I could have redone those first couple stories with him, because when I'm just doing an audiobook or the first, you know, other stories that I did, I put in all the silences to pace the story as if there were not going to be any music or any sound effects. When you add music and sound effects to the equation, you really need to readjust the pacing. And Carl did some of that for me on Without Sin, which was brilliant. He, you know, added in some space and made it really work with what he wanted to do with it. But yeah, it was a challenge. I think it's getting better. It's just, you know, when you have sound effects, you need to allow room for that. And if there's music, you want to allow room. If you watch a movie without the soundtrack, it gets super awkward how much silence there is.
It's,
you know,
weird. Yeah. There's a whole website for stuff like that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Films without music.
Silent, and also silent music videos.
Oh god, that creepy.
If anyone has not seen the David Bowie, Mick Jagger dancing in the street silent music video, It is one of the most that's my new big whoop. Scratch Come From Away, that music video.
Okay, I'll find the link
after.
I'll
have to check it out. Yeah.
I do have to say, like I don't want to toot our own horn, but like when we first started the other stories, we had a certain idea of how good it would be, but every time, we've been doing it 6 months now, it just seems to be getting better and better, like every time we do it, and I kind of feel like we're building up to something pretty special. The last few episodes have been pretty epic. I think they're pretty amazing.
Yeah, when you first asked me to do the podcast, I was like, okay, why not? You know, I didn't know where it was going to go, what kind of response it was going to get. And just watching the stats pile up has been incredible. I think the world of your guys' writing, but it was just like, whoa, this podcast is actually like, people are actually listening to it.
Yeah,
you know? I think we're all massively humbled by that. And, you know, the audience has been fantastic. They still get in touch and it's...
Yeah, the reviews are just, it's really, you know, it's a rare experience that as a performer, whether in a closet or not, that you get a response like that. So it's been really encouraging and humbling, like you said.
Yeah, in terms of financially, obviously, like, podcasts don't really make money, so I mean, we will find a way to pay you in some way at some point.
Otherwise, but I'm gonna have to fly to the UK and break your knees. No, I'm just kidding. Well, kidding.
I might write a story about that. Actually, that's a really good idea. But
Rowling's
like,
come from Britain.
But you make.
Or is he British in the story? He is, isn't he?
Say again.
Huh?
Terry Rowling is British, wasn't he?
Terry Rowling's.
Yes.
But like ACX, so ACX, for people that don't know, is Audio Book Creation Exchange, is that right?
Got it.
So it's a place where people who have published work on Amazon can upload their books and then find narrators. It's how we found Ian. And then you make the book, I guess, put it online, and then then we did a royalty share, right? So is it 50-50, I imagine, or?
Yeah, we split the royalties. So there are two kinds of contracts in the audiobook world. One is the royalty share contract, which is, you know, where the rights holder, whether it is the author or the publishing house and the narrator, split the royalties down the middle. Now, that doesn't mean that the cost of a book, you split that down the middle. The royalty amount is a fraction of that. So it's a small amount that can pile up to a significant amount over time. The other kind of contract is a per finished hour contract. So you sign up for a specific amount of money per finished hour. So if you have an 8-hour book and a book that is projected to be 8 hours, if it ends up being 9, you get more money, but you have a specific dollar amount or pound or euro amount that you get per finished hour.
Yeah. So, I mean,
so that's a lump sum, but if the book is like a bestseller, it actually might end up being less, even if it's a significant chunk of change.
Yeah. Economically, I think it works quite well to do the royalty share. And just because, I mean, how long does that contract last for? Is it forever or
indefinitely?
See, that's perfect. So if you keep building on those and, you get like a little bit of a trickle from different revenue sources and it just builds up over time. It's the same way the author business model works, really. Over time, it builds and builds.
Yeah. So as long as you don't, you know, as long as you are confident in the work,
yeah,
that it will, you know, work well as an audiobook and sell well, then absolutely royalty shares can be very lucrative.
Yeah, definitely. So if someone did want to get started in this and they understand how challenging it is, they understand they've got to do different voices and they've got to breathe correctly, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to just start reading the blog posts on ACX. ACX has a whole blog devoted to teaching people how to do this. They have equipment recommendations, equipment reviews, software information. They lay out the submission requirements very specifically. If you go to acx.com, you can find all the information you need from there.
Great. So I think I'm just about out of questions, but I mean, we've got the quick fire round at some point. Dan, have you got anything else you want?
Questions. I think, is there anyone in the business that, you know, you're aware of that you'd enjoy working with? How have you ever done much with working with other people voice wise?
No, actually. I've been trying to convince my fiance to do some dual narrator stuff with me because I think she'd be fantastic for certain genres of books. But she is resistant. mainly because she's seen how I've just been like in my headphones for 12 hours at a time. I haven't really worked with other people narrating or voice acting yet. I still dream of doing cartoons one day, which would be so cool to have, you know, a round table reading of something with people just for the voice acting, you know, aspect of it. No, I haven't had that opportunity yet. So I that would be really cool.
I'm sure there'll be like future projects from Hawk and Cleaver at some point. Like,
well, yeah. I think we're leaning somehow that way and trying to not give away too much, but yeah, I think we've got ideas for projects in the future that will bounce off the success of the other stories and we can do more with and make that bigger and better and something that hopefully people enjoy as well. So hopefully you'll stick around with us for as long as.
Hey man, have us. I'm here. I'll always be here. Absolutely. Y'all have been very, very, very good to me and bringing me in on so many of these stories. It's been a blast.
Yeah.
Well, we honestly couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah. Looking forward to meeting in person at some point. I mean, I definitely want to get over to New York next year at some point. So, I mean, how far away is that from you? Is that far?
It's like a 2-3 hour train ride. And I do the trip all the time because all the auditions for opera and musical theater are up in New York. So, I have to make the trip often. So yeah, just let me know, man. And if you ever want to crash in DC,
there will be a
couch available.
Should we do the quick fire round, Dan?
Quickly, please.
Let's do it, yep.
Okay, so Ian, here's the rub.
Oh no. Oh no.
So we're gonna like throw a lot of questions at you. You've got about 5 seconds to answer each one. Me and Dan will take it in turn to
It's like the Patronus quiz.
I did that today. Oh, that was
I took
fun.
Too long with some of the questions. I was like, now it's gonna give me something crappy, but it
did. The questions were bizarre though. I think one of mine that came up was like wood, rock, or earth. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck I pick.
Right, you found rocks in the earth? Those are the same thing.
One of the questions, it was literally who or why, and I was like, there's no option for what.
Fuck you.
But it doesn't matter for anyone interested. My Patronus is a dolphin, so I'm happy with that.
Nice.
What did you get?
I got a ragdoll cat, specifically ragdoll cat.
Ragdoll cat. So for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, check out the Pottermore website where you can answer a series of questions and find out which your Patronus is. And yeah, just bizarre questions, and you get given some weird animals, and yeah.
You're welcome, JK.
I did the quiz on there, which tells you which house you're in. What did you get? I reckon you would be what's the good one? The Harry Potter
Gryffindor
one?
Gryffindor?
You'd be
Hufflepuff?
Gryffindor, right?
I did two. One of them was Gryffindor, one of them was Ravenclaw.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I got Ravenclaw once, and today I redid it and got Slytherin.
I got Slytherin as well.
That's probably because you're a floating head in the darkness, Ian.
Yeah, for those of you who can't see me right now, I'm just a floating head, so.
Yeah. You're literally Voldemort on the back of Quirrell. check out Pottermore.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so Dan, you want to go first?
Yes, are you ready, Ian?
I was born ready.
Okay, first thing you do when you wake up?
Drink coffee.
Last thing before you go to sleep?
Play games on my phone.
Worst advice?
Worst advice? compare yourself to other people.
Oh, that's a good one. What makes a good narrator?
Patience.
What's your PIN number?
No.
What's your favorite film?
Oh, there are too many. The one that I keep coming back to is... No, I know Shawshank Redemption.
That's good. Favorite book? Yeah.
Oh, man. Probably Confederacy of Dunces.
Oh, I need to read that at some point. Oh, sorry.
Or no. 100 Years of Solitude. 100 Years of Solitude. 100 Years of Solitude.
Okay, favorite word?
Finagle.
Nice. Singing or dancing?
Singing.
Spirit animal?
Fox.
Spirit vegetable?
Brussels sprouts, because they're so funny looking.
Nice.
Okay, cool.
I think that was the toughest round of questions this time.
Yeah.
How'd I do?
Yeah,
fantastic.
All correct. You did really well.
10 out of 10. Just, yep, A plus.
A plus.
Cool. Okay, so I think that's pretty much us for today, right? Dan, is there anything we need to send people to or get them to do or tasks?
If you want to check out any of our stuff, it's www.hawkandcleaver.com and you can get yourself a free book just by visiting our website. And how can we find you, Ian?
You can find me on McEwen.com.
And we'll link to that in the show notes. But you should check out The Hipster from Outer Space, which is available on Audible.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's free. How does that work? It's free if you sign up, right?
It's free if you sign up for an Audible membership, which means that, you know, you pay a monthly fee and you get a certain amount of credits that you can use to buy audiobooks. But you can also buy it a la carte if you just want to listen to me pretend to be British for 8 hours?
It's about 6 hours of that and 2 hours of him pretending to be a cat.
Well, cool. It was my payday today, so no, I'm buying.
Do it!
Cool. All right, guys, yeah.
Thank you very much for coming out.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for doing all that you do and putting the positive force into the world with your voice.
I aim to please through storytelling.
Lovely.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.